I'm Larry Morrow, and this is Take Two. And this is part two of the interview you heard last week with Pete Gideon. And if you didn't hear the interview, let me just tell you who he is. Pete Gideon is a friend of mine, and in the record business, when you mention his name, it's like mentioning in the record business the Beatles or people of that ilk. And Pete is about to tell some incredible stories, some of which I have been involved in. But Pete, welcome back to part two of our program. How nice to see you again, sir.
Nice to be here, Larry.
Now, Pete, so in part one, we talked about you going to Decca Records, and your first big break actually was having the record by The Who no one had ever heard. You gave it to me. I fell in love with it. I played it, as you indicated. I was the first person in America to play that record, which then turned out to be the biggest record that The Who had ever had at that time. And it became their signature record. Okay, now, Pete, you're only in Detroit for a short period of time. And now your big break comes where they move you from Detroit. Was the second move to New York?
No. It's interesting. The second move, it was about 1966, maybe. I was working in Detroit and surrounding areas, local areas. And the company was starting to get a lot younger and a lot hipper. And they were signing some pretty interesting groups. They were always major in the country and what have you. But at that time, Decca Records kind of morphed into what was then called MCA Records. That's the name that everybody knows, MCA Distributing, well, Universal Distributing, MCA Records. And they formed it by using the relationship they had with Brunswick Records and Cap Records, and the whole thing became MCA Records. And in doing so, they started looking for younger people that really understood the music and the importance of getting it out there and getting some exposure and what have you. But the next move I had was I became a regional promotion man, and I covered Detroit, I covered Cleveland, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, well, those were the four, Cincinnati, you know, that pocket that, and I was always on the road. And as a result, there were local people. I was replaced by a local guy in Detroit. There was a local guy in Cleveland who covered Pittsburgh. There was a guy in Cincinnati. There was a guy in Buffalo. And they were responsible for their local markets. But my job was to bring that story together in a larger way. So I was on the road a lot, and I really, really enjoyed it. I loved going to Cleveland. I made a lot of friends in Cleveland. Cleveland was a super hip town. They had a great concert organization happening. They had great auditoriums and clubs and stuff. And it was just ripe for breaking acts also. And Buffalo had its uniqueness. Pittsburgh was a tough market. Cincinnati was a little bit more, I would say at that time, a little bit more country. But that was, I did that for a number of years, 4 or 5 years. And it taught you how to really manage your time. Time management was really important. Being in the right place at the right time. Making sure you could take the story that was happening in Cleveland, for example, and take it to Pittsburgh and have them latch onto it and get that expanded, and then maybe taking it to Buffalo or Detroit. And there were people just like me who had their own territories. And that was a pretty smart way of doing business in those days. And I did that for a while. And then I think that was like 1966, 67, maybe around there. And then in 1970, let's see, it must have been early 70s. I got a call one day from Vice President of Promotion in Los Angeles. And he said, you know, we really, really admire the job you're doing. And I was so pleased. I mean, you know, you hear something like that and it makes you feel good. You know you're doing good.
Right.
Because your records are being, Larry, there's nothing more exciting than driving down the freeway in Detroit and looking over at the car next to you. And there's a woman. The windows are rolled up. You can't hear what's going on, but there's a woman and she's tapping her steering wheel and she's mouthing the lyrics to a record. And you look over and you see it and you know exactly what she's listening to because you have the same radio station on and she's tapping her fingers on the steering wheel and she's mouthing the words to an Olivia Newton-John record. And you want to scream out, "Hey, I did that. Listen to what I just did. I just came from there." And, you know, of course, nobody knows. Nobody, you're anonymous. They don't know how it happens, but they like it. Yeah. And it's that reinforcement. Doesn't happen often, but it does happen. So anyway, they offered me a job at the Tower in Los Angeles. It was on Universal Studio lot. And I had a young family at the time, two little girls. And we picked up and we moved. And I lived in the Sheraton Hotel, I remember, for about a month while we were looking for some place to live, a house or something to rent. And my wife at the time, bless her, she found a place and got the kids into school. And I was so busy working, quite honestly, that I pretty much was ignoring my family because all of a sudden I was no longer on the road in these four or five markets, but I had the entire United States. I could go anywhere. And it was remarkable. And at that time, it was magical. It was the early 70s. And on Uni Records, they had just signed Elton John, a guy named Elton John, who had a single out called Your Song. And that became pretty interesting because the career that was built on All We Did was pretty amazing. And they also, on Uni Records, they had Neil Diamond, who had Hot August Night, I believe, at the time, that double album that was recorded, I think, at the Greek Theater. And I mean, he could do no wrong. Elton could do no wrong. It was one artist after another. It's like, and then along came Leonard Skinner, and along came, I'm freezing up on names because, and you go on the road with these people and you learn about them. Leonard Skinner was good old boys from the South and they would fight anybody. They fight among themselves. They'd rather use their fists and their instruments. I mean, yet they were amazing. Sweet Home Alabama became kind of an anthem. Actually, it is the state song of Alabama.
Yes, it is.
And there were going on the road with Elton, going on the road with The Who, the stories. I was on the road with The Who again in Flint, Michigan, Larry, where they were staying at a Holiday Inn, and they were playing, and I cannot exactly remember where they were playing, but it was Keith Moon's 21st birthday. He finally, as much as he would drink, he could finally do it legally. Mm-hmm. So we had a party at that hotel, at that Holiday Inn, and a cake. The opening act was Herman's Hermits. After that particular night, they played a great gig. And after that night, they never could stay at a Holiday Inn again. They were banned from Holiday Inns because the cake fight that took place in this meeting room and people running naked up and down the halls and the legendary story about Keith driving a car into the Holiday Inn swimming pool. I mean, all of that becomes legend. You don't know anymore what's real and what's not real. It's out there. I was there. I saw it. You know, it was unbelievable.
This is Take Two, and I'm Larry Marlow, and you're listening to my special guest today, Pete Gideon. Now, Pete is telling the stories of promoting records like Neil Diamond. He just talked about The Who and Elton John. There is one wonderful story that I can hardly wait to have Pete relate. First, There are actually two stories, and they're going to be back-to-back. One of them is when The Who came to Cleveland, and secondly would be another one by the name of Telly Savalas. But anyway, so Pete comes to Cleveland, and The Who, I think The Who had been out there only a couple of years. The Who's performing, and with the radio station you all know, Wixie 1260, and of course Belkin Production is promoting the concert. And Pete says, Larry, let's go to dinner before the concert. And I said, okay, Pete, that'll be good. And what I was not aware of is the surprise that was about to happen. So we go to dinner. We're in this little place on Euclid Avenue. And all of a sudden, I look up, and Pete has the entire Who group there. And Peter Townsend, I think to myself, am I sitting across the table from Peter Townsend and Moon and all those guys? And then you gave me a gold record for being the first one to promote that song. And then they went on and performed, and they were wonderful. But now the story that I want you to tell is the story about Telly Savalas. Telly at this time is the most popular face and voice on national television. And his favorite line is, you all know it, I'm the one who loves you, baby.
Loves you, baby.
Yeah, who the one who loves you, baby. So now, Pete, you call me and you said, Larry, I'm bringing Telly Savalas to town. He's only going to do one radio interview and one television interview. And I want you to interview him, but I will tell you this. He's an intellectual. He worked for the State Department. So you need to do your homework, because if he gets bored in the interview, he will actually get up and walk out. And I said, oh, no. So I really did my homework. So take it from there, Pete.
All right. Well, let me preface it first by saying, Telly was an artist. He was really a television. He did a bunch of movies, of course, some pretty good war movies and stuff. But when the Kojak role came around, that was Telly. He became Kojak.
Yes, he did.
People just, for some reason, just latched right onto it. And that line that you spoke of, who loves you, baby? We were in a meeting one day, and I would park my car on the studio lot, and all these stars, if you will, who are working, they all had bungalows, little bungalows. They had a bedroom in it, a bathroom, and like a living room. And Telly used to love to play poker and cards and stuff. And because my car was parked there, I'd run into him from time to time. I knew who he was. Actually, he was kind of intimidating, you know, when you don't know anything about him. He's Kojak. And that line, who loves you, baby? Somebody came up with the idea in the meeting. Why don't we try and we'll have a song written called Who Loves You, Baby? And we'll put it on an album called Who Loves You, Baby? Put his picture on the cover, and we'll get it out in time for Christmas. And maybe we'll have something, maybe we won't. We don't know. We'll throw it up against the wall. So they wrote the song, which was a pretty good song. Telly wasn't the best singer in the world. Kind of sounded like a frog. He croaked it pretty good, you know. But that wasn't important either. It turned out it wasn't important at all. And he said to me one day, the album was out, and we were getting a little bit of sporadic airplay on the song because it was Telly Savalas. And morning show guys would play it. Wasn't in any kind of heavy rotation or anything, but they would play it. And they would always get responses to it because, again, it was Telly.
Right.
He said to me one day, I was parking my car, and it was like around just after Thanksgiving. And he said, you know, and I had asked him something about would he come into my office and make a bunch of phone calls to radio stations for me, you know, do a ID or do whatever the station wanted. And he says, I could do that, but what I really want to do is I want to go home for Christmas. And if you guys will pay for it, I'll do whatever you guys want me to do. And he and his brother Stavros, their mom lived in Queens, I believe it was, Queens. And he just wanted to go home for Christmas. So he said, I'll do five or six cities. And we picked the Midwest. And of course, we did, because of my relationships, we did Detroit,
Mm-hmm.
We did Cleveland. We did Cincinnati because they had a great morning show there on television. I think we went to Dayton, Ohio, and maybe Pittsburgh. And he was the most engaging, terrific guy. But like you said, he would only do one radio interview and one television.
Right.
We ended up in New York because obviously he wanted to see his mom for Christmas. You know, that was the idea. And we're going to do the one radio station that he had agreed to do. And we're walking down, I think Broadway maybe. And the station was on 43rd Street or something off of Broadway. And we look in this alley. And there's two policemen in the alley with their squad car, and they're trying to put a drunk into their car who's resisting. He has his elbows and his hands up against the door frame. He's not going in that car. And Telly just said to me, "Hey, watch this. I can't imagine what he's going to do." And he walks up the alley, and he taps the guy on the shoulder very hard. You know, bam, bam, bam. And the guy, he's got his attention now, and he looks at him. He looks up at him, and he shrinks into the car. I mean, it was, he had that power.
Pete, let me interject this. So we go on with you telling me, "Larry, be careful, do your homework, because if he's unhappy with the interview, he'll get up and walk out." So I really did my homework. And so, and you may or may not recall that when Telly was on with his television show, he had a sucker in his mouth. And the reason he had a sucker in his mouth, because on the television show, he had a problem smoking. So every time he would want a cigarette, he would go get the sucker. So when he came to Cleveland, I'm up on the second floor of 3WE Radio at 1100. And I look out and I see Pete get out of the limousine with Telly Savalas. And I said, "Oh my God, there he is." And I'm petrified because I think the guy's 6'5" and a big voice and stuff like that. So now Pete walks into the studio with Telly Savalas. I had every member of our radio station, which are about 28 people, waiting in the lobby with a sucker in their mouth. And you and Pete, you and Telly walk in, and Telly Savalas loved that. And he said, "What a great idea." So I thought, well, okay, I'm over hurdle number one. We get in the studio to record. And again, I did my homework. And I said, "You know, Telly, you're friends with Paul Anka." He said, "I am." And I said, "Do you know that Paul Anka's mother was born in Aleppo, Syria? His father, obviously, was Italian." And I said, "And you're Greek, your dad's Greek, but your mother was born in Aleppo, Syria." And he said, "I didn't know that." And I said, and my dad was born in Canada. And so I'm French Canadian, and my mother was born in Aleppo, Syria." He went like this, "Larry, get up." I got up. He gave me a big hug. He said, "We're family." And the interview must have gone on for over an hour. But Pete, you know, I never forgot that. And then I became friendly with him. Every once in a while, I'd have him on the air. But it was because of you. And I got to love Telly Savalas. He was incredible. Now, Pete, so now you move from Los Angeles to New York City. Pete, share with us. When all of a sudden, one day, you're sitting in your celebrated chair overlooking Times Square and thinking, do you pinch yourself and say, is this really happening? This kid from Detroit who worked in the factory? And then all of a sudden, here you are, the man, right? There is no one in your position at Epic Records or whatever label you were on at the time that has a bigger job than you. You have the biggest job in America, promoting records for the biggest stars, not only in America, but for the biggest stars in the world. Pete, share with us, what was that like? When you would lay your head on your pillow at night, what was that like?
It was pretty darn amazing. I think at first it was a little scary. I didn't know what I was getting into. I always, even in Detroit, I dreamed of one day maybe having the opportunity to work in New York, because New York is, to me, was always the capital of the world, whether it's finance or fashion or entertainment industry or you name it. But New York was the capital of the world. It was happening 24 hours a day. And I always wanted to go there. and at least see if I could do it. And I had that opportunity. I was given an opportunity. I was still working at MCA. And Ron Alexenberg was the president of Epic Records. And he hired me to come to New York. And I couldn't resist. I had to do it. And I went there. And again, it was pretty intimidating at first. I never rode a subway in my life. I didn't know how to get around. I didn't know where I was going, but it didn't take long because you made friends with people in the industry you worked with. And they, you know, they said, well, you take this train to go here. The first time I went to Yankee Stadium, I got lost. You know, you get lost in the Yankee Stadium. Anyway, the job was really wonderful and the company really had it together. Every Monday morning, they'd have a meeting with all the department heads and they'd start out talking about what was happening on the charts with their current records. And, you know, this record is happening here, and this record's happening there. And then they would ask the promotion department, in this case, they would ask me, where is airplay happening? Where do you need to get records in? And I never had that opportunity before. It was like you had a fight to make that happen. And they pushed the button. If it was in St. Petersburg, Florida, or Nashville, Tennessee, or Phoenix, Arizona, you could bet that if it came up in the meeting, somebody was following up on it. So we had a lot of camaraderie, a lot of help, and it created a tremendous amount of team spirit. You know, we were all breaking records. And yeah, I worked Boston, Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson was a great story. Boston, Patti LaBelle, there were so many. But my favorite New York story at Epic was, there was a new artist, and it's again sort of serendipitous because where did it come out of? But Cleveland, Ohio. It was Meat Loaf. Bad Out of Hell.
Yes, you bet.
And, you know, Springsteen was so hot at the time, and music was going through a little bit of a change. And no, every label that they sent, or they went to every label in the industry. I'm talking about Atlantic Records or Warner Brothers or Elektra or Polydor or you name it. And they were turned down everywhere they went. Nobody understood what that record was. They thought it was humorous or whatever and never gave it a shot, never believed in it. And Ron heard it. There was a guy named Steve Popovich. He was in Cleveland. He had a record label called Cleveland International. And that was the label that Meat Loaf was on. And Ron signed that Cleveland International deal and got Meat Loaf. And we got behind that record, and the rest is just history. It was such a wonderful thing. And again, it was one of those weird experiences. I lived on 75th Street in Manhattan, and I didn't know this at the time. Meat Loaf lived right around the corner from me on 74th Street.
Okay. You know, Pete, you know, another thing is that what people don't know is that you played such a major role in my entire life. You took me from Flint, Michigan to Detroit. And then from Detroit to Cleveland. And the first guy that I met, I said, Pete, I need to meet some people in Cleveland whom you must know. The first person you introduced me to was Steve Popovich. He had a little rock and roll band. And then I became very close with Steve. And I thought, Pete Gideon was not only took me from Flint to Detroit to Cleveland, and then you started to bring the stars to me. You bring me The Who, and then you bring me, of course, Steve Popovich, and then you bring me Telly Savalas. And so I just want to take a moment to say, Pete, there was no one on the face of the planet that I have admired more in this business and who I owe more than you.
You know, it's Larry, we bonded in so many ways. I mean, it wasn't just radio and records. I mean, we became really good friends, and I just loved it, you know?
What the people don't know is that we were not only good friends, we were best friends. I was best man at your wedding. and what Great. I was thrilled to do. Well, Pete, we've come to the end of our interview. And I just want you to know how much people have admired you over the years. And I can't thank you enough for spending time with us today.
My pleasure. Truly, truly my pleasure.
Well, I'm Larry Morrow. This is Take Two. Let me know that you're listening and tell a friend about our new radio program. So until next time, do all the good you can, every time you can, to everyone you can. For Take Two, I'm Larry Morrow.